理课堂听 class.com。
Model Test 3 Part 3 Listening Comprehension Section A Directions In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said.Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices with A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then, mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line, though the center.
Question 11. Finding this china cabinet was a real stroke of luck. Because of the scratch on the side, the dealer charged me $50 less than the regular price.
You were very lucky. And with a little polish, the scratch won't even show.
What does the man think of the china cabinet?
Question 12.
I'm really exhausted, but I really don't want to miss the performance of the disabled artists in the hall at 8 o'clock.
If I were you, I would stay at the dormitory and watch it on the campus net.
What does the woman mean?
Question 13. I'm really getting worried about Mary. She was sitting in for the exam for the 2 weeks' time, but all she is talking about now is nothing but an upcoming concert.
She may fail along that line. Let's try to talk some sense into her.
What are the speakers probably going to do?
Question 14. Did you hear what George did last night? He was cooking dinner for the members of the drama club, and he spilled the tomato sauce all over the kitchen.
Doesn't surprise me one bit. He did the same thing last semester, only with a Spanish club and chocolate cream.
What do we learn about George from the conversation?
Question 15.
I have never seen such an interesting show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
I must admit that I felt sleepy during the 2 hours.
How did the woman feel about the show?
Question 16. I'm having a hard time keeping up in my biology class. I'm seriously consider hiring a tutor.
A word of advice. Don't make a mistake I made last semester and wait until after the midterm exam to do it.
What does the woman mean?
Question 17. What did you think of the mid-exam?
I had expected it to be easy, but at the end of the first hour, I was still on the first page. I barely had time to get to the last question.
What does the man think of the exam? Question 18. This school is lucky to have a teacher as good as Professor Helen Johnson.
She is one in a million.
What does the man mean? Now you will hear two long conversations.
Conversation 1.
So, you really believe that clothes carry a kind of message for other people, and that what we put on is in some way a reflection of what we feel?
Oh yes, very much so. People are beginning now to take seriously the idea of a kind of psychology of clothing, to believe that there is not just individual taste in our clothes, but also a thinking behind what we wear, which is trying to express something we may not even be aware of ourselves.
But surely this has always been the case. We all dress up when we want to impress someone, such as for a job interview with a prospective employer.
True, but that's a conscious act. What I'm talking about is more of a subconscious thing. Take, for example, the student who is away from home. He tends to wrap himself up more than the others. This is because he is probably feeling homesick. Similarly, a general feeling of insecurity can sometimes take the form of overdressing in warmer clothes than are necessary.
Can you give any other examples of this kind?
Yes. I think people who are sociable and outgoing tend to prefer brighter and more dazzling colors, yellows, bright reds, and so on. And aggressive clothes might indicate an aggressive personality or attitude to life.
Do you think the care, or lack of it, over the way we actually wear our clothes has anything to tell us?
Yes, indeed. The length, for example, of a men's trousers speak volumes about his awareness of his own image. Or, if his trousers are hanging down, this probably means he's absorbed by other things.
Oh, very interesting. Tell me more about it.
Okay. Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What are people now beginning to take seriously about clothing, according to the man? Question 20. What does the man think of the act of dressing up for a job interview? Question 21. What does it probably reflect if a student tends to wrap himself up more than the others? Question 22. What sort of clothes do those people who are sociable and outgoing often prefer?
Conversation 2.
Okay, may I see your driver's license, please?
What? Did I do anything wrong?
License, please, and your car registration.
Oh, yeah, it's here somewhere in the glove compartment. Yeah, here it is.
Madam, did you realize you were speeding in a school zone?
What? No, I didn't. but that's probably because my odometer is broken. I mean, malfunctioning.
Yes, you were going 50 miles per hour in a 20 miles per hour zone, and you failed to come to a complete stop at the intersection back there.
Rolling stops don't count.
And one of your brake lights is out, you're not wearing a seatbelt, and your driver's license expired 6 months ago.
And your name is Officer Smith. Hey, are you related to the Smiths in town? My husband's cousin's husband. I think his name is Fred. Works for the police department here. Or is that the fire department? Anyway, I thought you might be good pals and, you know...
Hey, are you trying to influence an officer? I could have this car impounded right now because of these infractions.
No, of course not.
Okay, then. Here's your ticket. You can either appear in court to pay the fine or mail it in. Have a nice day.
Do you take cash? Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23. What is the relationship between the two speakers? Question 24. What law did the woman break in the school zone? Question 25. What happens at the end of the conversation?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on the answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. In the 18th century, French economists protested the excessive regulation of business by the government. Their motto was laissez-faire. Laissez-faire means let the people do as they choose. In the economic sense, this meant that while the government should be responsible for things like maintaining peace and protecting property rights, it should not interfere with private business. It shouldn't create regulations that might hinder business growth, nor should it be responsible for providing subsidies to help. In other words, governments should take a hands-off approach to business. For a while in the United States, laissez-faire was a popular doctrine, but things quickly changed. After the Civil War, politicians rarely opposed the government's generous support of business owners. They were only too glad to support government land grants and loans to railroad owners, for example. Their regulations kept tariffs high, and that helped protect American industrialists against foreign competition. Ironically, in the late 19th century, a lot of people believed that the laissez-faire policy was responsible for the country's industrial growth. It was generally assumed that because business owners did not have a lot of external restrictions placed on them by the government, they could pursue their own interests, and this is what made them so successful. But in fact, many of these individuals would not have been able to meet their objectives if not for government support.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What does the passage mainly talk about? Question 27. Who first used the motto laissez-faire? Question 28. What is the principal idea of the laissez-faire policy? Passage 2. Over the past decade, the environmental movement has exploded onto the minds of mainstream consumers, a fact not lost on marketers and advertisers. Green advertising started in the mid-1980s, when issues of the environment muscled their way to the forefront of marketing. Advertisers saw the consumer desire for environmentally safe products and tried to meet the demand as quickly as possible. Not surprisingly, this first wave suffered from rough and poorly conceived marketing efforts. Many advertisers embraced a genuine concern for the environment, but consumers realized that some companies made false claims and exploited the movement, using such ambiguous terms as environmentally friendly and green. Consumers grew wary of environmental appeals, and advertisers reacted by reducing its emphasis. In 1992, the Federal Trade Commission established guidelines for green marketing, followed shortly by state governments. California passed particularly strict laws, setting definitions for terms like ozone-friendly, biodegradable, and recycled. According to the state's court, California seeks to guard against potentially inaccurate claims or ecological boost about products with minimal environmental attributes. Texas, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Tennessee, Connecticut, and Washington soon followed the Golden State's lead. The rigid regulations have left a number of advertisers confused and frustrated. Although some feel that environmental claims have already peaked and are on their way out, some believe that we've now entered green advertising's third wave, during which environmental concern is part of the mainstream too.
Questions 29 to 32 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. What was the problem with green advertisements in early time? Question 30. What was the response to the early green advertisements by consumers? Question 31. How did green advertisements change after the first wave? Question 32. Which state took the lead in guarding inaccurate environmental claims? Passage 3. Your professor has asked me to talk to you today about the topic that should be of real concern to civil engineers, the erosion of the U.S. beaches. Let me start with some statistics. Did you know that 90% of the coast in this country is eroding? On the Gulf of Mexico, for instance, erosion averages 4 to 5 feet per year. Over the past 20 years, there has been an increase in building along the coast, even though geologists and environmentalists have been warning communities about problems like erosion. Some way communities have tried to protect their buildings and roads and to build seawalls. However, geologists have found that such stabilizing structures actually speed up the destruction of the beaches. These beaches with seawalls, called stabilized beaches, are much narrower than beaches without them. You may wonder how seawalls speed up the beach loss. The explanation is simple. If the flow of the beaches is gentle, the water energy is lessened as it washes up along the shore. It is reduced even more that returns to the sea, so it doesn't carry back much sand. On the other hand, when the water hits the nearby vertical face of the seawall, it goes straight back to the sea with the full force of its energy, and it carries back a great deal of sand. Because of the real risk of losing beaches, many geologists support a ban on all types of stabilizing construction on shorelines.
Questions 33 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 33. Why do communities build seawalls? Question 34. How does a gently sloping beach help prevent erosion? Question 35. What do the geologists advise people to do?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written.
Decision-making is a complex business subject, which combines the most complicated elements of the operational and theoretical aspects of management. The ability to implement the decision-making process is often determined by environmental factors rather than the steps in some ideal model. Decisions are frequently influenced more by the environment and structure of the organization than by the method itself. The process of decision-making will, therefore, be examined in light of environmental factors. One of these factors, social and cultural background, affects the interaction among people involved in the decision-making process and provides the cultural framework within which they may comfortably operate. The best alternative for solving a problem, for example, might be to replace an employee who is unsuited for a position. However, in the society's culture, there is a tradition of lifetime employment with one company. That alternative is not really feasible because of social and cultural restrictions. With regards to the structure of an organization, there are a number of factors that may alter the decision-making process. The amount of flexibility within an organization and the available resources, such as facilities, technology, or financial reserves, are often controlling factors. Another organizational factor is the importance of the decision being made in relation to other problems and responsibilities of management. The amount of data available may also limit the range of alternatives that can be considered. The relative importance of one decision is weighed against the amount of effort involved in finding a solution and the benefit the company will receive from its implementation.
Decision-making is a complex business subject which combines the most complicated elements of the operational and theoretical aspects of management. The ability to implement the decision-making process is often determined by environmental factors rather than the steps in some ideal model. Decisions are frequently influenced more by the environment and structure of the organization than by the method itself. The process of decision-making will, therefore, be examined in the light of environmental factors. One of these factors, social and cultural background, affects the interaction among people involved in the decision-making process and provides the cultural framework within which they may comfortably operate. The best alternative for solving a problem, for example, might be to replace an employee who is unsuited for a position. However, if in the society's culture there is a tradition of lifetime employment with one company, that alternative is not really feasible because of social and cultural restrictions. With regard to the structure of an organization, there are a number of factors that may alter the ideal decision-making process. The amount of flexibility within an organization and the available resources, such as facilities, technology, or financial reserves, are often controlling factors. Another organizational factor is the importance of the decision being made in relation to other problems and responsibilities of management. The amount of data available may also limit the range of alternatives that can be considered. The relative importance of one decision is weighed against the amount of effort involved in finding a solution and the benefit the company will receive from its implementation.
Decision-making is a complex business subject which combines the most complicated elements of the operational and theoretical aspects of management. The ability to implement the decision-making process is often determined by environmental factors rather than the steps in some ideal model. Decisions are frequently influenced more by the environment and structure of the organization than by the method itself. The process of decision-making will, therefore, be examined in light of environmental factors. One of these factors, social and cultural background, affects the interaction among people involved in the decision-making process and provides the cultural framework within which they may comfortably operate. The best alternative for solving a problem, for example, might be to replace an employee who is unsuited for a position. However, in the society's culture, there is a tradition of lifetime employment with one company. That alternative is not really feasible because of social and cultural restrictions. With regards to the structure of an organization, there are a number of factors that may alter the decision-making process. The amount of flexibility within an organization and the available resources, such as facilities, technology, or financial reserves, are often controlling factors. Another organizational factor is the importance of the decision being made in relation to other problems and responsibilities of management. The amount of data available may also limit the range of alternatives that can be considered. The relative importance of one decision is weighed against the amount of effort involved in finding a solution and the benefit the company will receive from its implementation. Thank you.